Welcome, dear seekers, pilgrims, rising investment gurus. You have reached your destination. You have come to the temple of the dividend discount models, where you will learn divine knowledge and techniques that will tilt the odds of success in your favor. You will see stocks and businesses in a new light, and yours truly will stop playing games and get to work on teaching you how to do these things. Okay, I'm sorry. Some of this stuff might seem like magic or might seem like Sanskrit or whatever, but it really isn't that hard. In fact, it's pretty straightforward once you get past all the verbiage, all the words that we use, which don't make any sense in their context. The calculations are actually very, very simple. Trust me, okay? So let's get started on slide number 6. Dividend discount models. One popular group of models of fundamental analysis is the dividend discount models. Shares of stock, according to this model, are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. If you remember from our previous presentation, we said the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. What are those future cash flows worth to us today? Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, during the late 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned, outdated fuddy-duddies. I remember one of the carnival men on the cable news networks, the cable financial news networks, exclaiming that anybody who used these were just completely out of date and out of touch with reality. He even went so far as to criticize Mr. Warren Buffett and his cohorts. Right. Those investors who did follow these tools, these models, weathered the 2000 to 2002 dividend downturn very well. In fact, they went up. You can believe that while everybody else has gone down. Dividend payers also did well in 2022. Dividends don't lie. It's a great saying, and it's also a book that's out of print. They came up with a new version called Dividends Still Don't Lie, and I just checked it out of the library. I got to play with it and see what they've changed. But it's okay book. Not as good as the books in the bibliography, so check those out first. The discount rate. Here's one of those phrases we're going to use that are going to drive you nuts. What is the discount rate? Has anything to do with going to the store and getting a discount? No, it's not that kind of discount. The discount rate is the rate of return that we choose to calculate the value of shares of the stock using the dividend discount models. Now, this is chosen by us. It goes by various names: required rate of return, desired rate of return, expected rate of return, or simply the discount rate. This is what we are after. This is the kind of return that we are interested in. The predicted valuations from these models are very sensitive to our required rate of returns. Our results will vary wildly depending upon our choice of the required rate of return. The fact that everyone has a different required rate of return, expected rate of return, desired rate of return, means that different investors will expect and demand different stock prices. Somebody might be happy with 6%, another person wants 10%, and a third wants 15%. And there's a saying that it's in a few different versions, but Mark Twain, I think, said it best when he said, it's the difference of opinion that makes horse races. In other words, not everybody bets on the exact same horse. When that happens, right, things get out of whack, and that's kind of what's happening It's happened in the past, and it's gonna happen again in the future. And right now, it's happening with the Magnificent Seven. You might have heard of, yeah. When everyone bets on the same horse, that's usually the ending is not so good for most people. Let's start with the very first model. Now, you're going to want to go to the Chapter 4 section of the class website and print out the formula sheet. I think it's a good idea to print it out. In the face-to-face class, we give it to the students and we give it to them on a different colored paper because we think it's so important, along with another sheet that we'll see in our next presentation. So you have it in your hot little hands. The zero growth model. This assumes dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. And it's a very simple model. You just believe that the value of the stock is equal to the annual dividends divided by your required rate of return, expected rate of return, desired rate of return, or you could use the term discount rate if it doesn't scare you. So let's say a stock were paying us $3 per share. If our required rate of return were 6%, then we believe the stock would be worth $50. $3 divided by 0.06, that's 6%, is $50 per share. Now, this might look familiar to you, especially those of you that, you know, enjoy math. It's simply another way to look at the dividend yield that we discussed in Chapter 3. Here is the formula, value of this on slide number 9. Annual dividends divided by the required rate of return. Well, what we did really, there's the dividend yield formula. We took the required rate of return and made it the dividend yield. And we took the value of the stock and made it the market price. We basically just swapped these two guys. The value of the stock we assumed to be the market price. And the required rate of return we assumed to be the dividend yield. So if this makes any sense to you, how we just swapped the items in the quotients there, then great. If not, just ignore it. But what the takeaway is that investors who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively for its dividend yield. What is the stock paying me today? And that's what we're interested in. What is the current income that is generated from its dividends? That's why it's called the zero growth model. We're really not interested in growth. We're more interested in the dividends that the stock is generating. Does that make sense? Think of it like a savings account. Well, obviously, it's very, very different. It pays dividends, not interest, which are legally two different things. And the stock could stop paying those dividends next quarter. They're under no obligation, right? Also, the price of this stock could go down. The savings account is not going to go down. Here's a real-life example. This is Consolidated Edison. Have you ever heard of them? They've been around in one form or another since 1822, I think. It's the utility company for New York City. ED is the symbol. And as of February 9th, the stock price was $89.06. And it's currently paying $3.32 per year in annual dividends. Now, they do increase their dividends a little bit, but let's just assume that they're not increasing their dividends. What is our required rate of return? Well, let's use 8%. If we use 8%, then we take the value of the value is equal to the dividends, $3.32, divided by 0.08. And if you don't understand why it's 0.08, contact me. Por ciento, by 100, right? Divide 8 by 100 and you'll get 0.08. And that gives us $41.50. It's selling for 89 bucks. So the stock is overpriced for us if we require a rate of 8%. Let's lower that to 5%. $3.32 divided by 0.05 is $66.40. So if we're requiring a 5% rate of return, the stock is still too expensive for us. It doesn't mean it's a bad investment. The model is just not pointing us towards a company like this, because if we assume that they're not going to be growing and utilities don't grow very fast, then, you know, we're not going to get our 5%. With the market price of $89.06, the stock is yielding 3.73%. So you take the dividend divided by the current market price. You see the zero growth model and the dividend yield, they're just two sides of a coin, two different sides of a coin. So the zero growth model is used for stable income producing stocks. With a price of $89.06, we would want to accept a return of 3.73%. You with me? Okay, I hope so. If not, go back over, you know, just pause it and go back over it and look at the formula sheet. And then in the face-to-face class, we would stop right now and do the first problem in worksheet number one. So you might want to do that now, or you might want to wait, but you're going to see in the worksheets and the assignment and the exam, the first problem is going to be a utility, zero growth. Okay? All right. Can I make it any plainer? Slide number 11. Now, that model, the zero growth model, is really not something that most of us are interested in, because most of us are interested in growth, right? And so there are models that take into account companies that are growing their dividends. And one of the most popular one is called the Gordon Growth Model, named after the professor in Toronto who developed it at the University of Toronto. Yeah. It's also called, I don't understand why, the Constant Perpetual Growth Model. Now, how's that for a silly name? It came from the Department of Redundancy Department. Constant Perpetual, aren't they the same thing? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to call it the Gordon Growth Model. I think that's a better name because he's the guy who did it. This assumes that dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually into the future. I love that word, perpetually. It allows you to spit on your friends when you say it. I'm going to buy a stock that is perpetually growing their dividend. And what happens is we've just added a couple more terms to the zero growth model. Here's the zero growth model. Annual dividends divided by a required rate of return. If you don't believe me, go back and take a look. And what we've done is we've added in the numerator the quantity 1 plus the dividend growth rate. And in the denominator, we have subtracted from the required rate of return the dividend growth rate. So really, if we put in 0, we get the zero growth model, because annual dividends times 1 plus 0, that's 1. Anything times 1 is the same thing. It's the identity computation. And then if you subtract 0 from anything in the denominator, you get whatever you started with. You know, required rate of return minus 0 is the required rate of return. So this is basically the zero growth model, where it is not growing at a rate of 0%. It's growing at 3 or 5 or 6%. So let's take a look at it an example. If our stock that we're looking at is growing their dividends at 5% and they are paying a dollar, then next year's dividend will be 1.05, right? $1.05. How do we get that? Well, a dollar times 1 plus 0.05 is dollar times 1.05. Check it out on your calculator. You'll get $1.05. And if you don't understand why 1 plus 5% is 1.05, contact me. Right, it's not 1.5. No. That would be 50% growth. No. So we take the dollar, times it by 1.05, and we get $1.05. And then we take our required rate of return, let's say is 10%. We subtract 5% from that. So 0.10 minus 0.05 is 0.05. And if you don't understand that, contact me. So 1.05 divided by 0.05 is $21. So we believe the stock will be worth $21 per share. Do it. Don't, 99-cent calculator. It's all you need, folks. All you need is a 99-cent calculator to do these calculations. All right. So now we see that the model is good for companies with consistent dividend growth. And who are those? The large cap blue chip stalwarts, as Peter Lynch likes to call them. Slide number 12. So now let's take a look at some real life examples, real companies. You might have heard of Target, that fabulously exclusive French department. No, Target. Okay, come on. Fess up. You shop at Target, right? So do we. Okay. You know, it's not glamorous, but their prices are pretty darn good. Target. Current market price as of February 9th was $146.53. Currently paying $4.40 in annual dividends. Let's assume the dividends are growing at 8%. So let's make that assumption here. If our required rate of return is 13%, we plug in the numbers. So currently paying $4.40 times 1.08. Everybody understand that? 1 plus the dividend growth rate. 8% is 0.08, so 1.08. In the denominator, we take 13% minus 8%, or 0.13 minus 0.08. And that gives us, in the numerator, $4.75.2, or just write down 4.752, divided by 0.05, 5%. And that gives us $95.04. The current price is $146. So it's not a particularly great choice if we require 13%. But look, I don't require 13%. I'm very happy with 8, 9, 10%. So let's try 10%. Let's run the numbers again. And this time, instead of a required rate of return of 13%, let's use a required rate of return of 10%. So $4.40 times 0.08, well, that's the same thing. The numerator is 4.752, a little over $4.75. But now we take 0.10 divided by 0.08, or 0.02, 2%. And that gives us a price of over $130, $137. What a deal. Note how sensitive these dividend discount models, specifically the Gordon growth model, are to our choice of the required rate of return. At 13%, the model says, oh no, it's a little overpriced. At 10%, the model says, ooh, what a deal. It's paying $146 and we think it's worth $237. Target might not be the fanciest store in town, but they sure are profitable. Yes, it's a very profitable enterprise. Even though, unlike some of their bigger counterparts, they have not been successful leaving the United States. They are still a domestic company without any outside exposure. They tried going into Canada, which you'd think they would do a good job because they're based in Minneapolis, I think, right? They're based in Minneapolis, close to the Canadian border. But they really failed miserably in Canada and had to leave with their tails between their tails between their legs. Yeah, they looked bad. So, but still, they're very profitable in the United States. And that's a pretty big market, isn't it? Okay, how about AbbVie? What a silly name, AbbVie. They're a pharmaceutical company that spun off from Abbott Labs, which has been around for decades. And they are currently selling for $174.08 as of the 9th of February, 2024, and paying $6.20 in annual dividends. Now, let's assume again, just for the sake of simplicity, that they're growing at about 1.08% or 8%. 1.08 is the number we're going to use in our calculation. So if our required rate of return is 13%, $6.20 times 1.08 gives us almost $6.60 or $6.70, 6.696. And you can round it or you can leave it the way it is, because we're not trying to be too precise here. We divide that by 13% minus 8%, and that's 0.05. So we get about $134, or $133.92. Stock price is $174. So the model is saying, you know, you really shouldn't expect a 13% return from this stock. But what if our required rate of return were only 10%? Again, lower our required rate of return, our expected rate of return, our desired rate of return, the discount rate. They all mean the same thing. So you're going to see all four. $6.20 times 1.08 is the same 6.696. This time we divide it by 10% minus 8%, or 0.02, 2%. And the model is saying that AbbVie is worth $334, $334.82, but we're not going to be precise. Let's just say $335. The model is pointing us to companies like AbbVie. We now have to spend a whole lot more time researching their products, their competitors, their customers, suppliers. Read everything you can. download that annual report. Watch and listen to the earnings calls. Yeah, this is just one little part of our research. It's pointing us to companies like this. It doesn't mean we should run out and buy AbbVie. No, 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 no. It means we should research them and then research their competitors. And I've already said that. Slide number 14, Illinois Tool Works. Who or what is Illinois Tool Works? Well, folks, they're one of the companies been around for over 100 years. You never hear about them, but you're surrounded by their products every day, and you don't even know it. The current market price as of the 9th of February, $255.75. Currently paying $5.60 in annual dividends. And again, let's assume that they're growing their dividends at 8% a year. Our required rate of return is 13%. So $5.60 times 1.08. You see, these calculations aren't hard, folks. I hope you're doing them with your 99-cent calculator. Is $6.048. Again, we're going to take 13% minus 8%, or 0.05. And the price is $120.96. So again, if you want 13%, this model is saying, probably not going to get it. But what if we're happy with only 10%? And I'm happy with 10%. $5.60 times 1.08 is that same 6.048 divided by 10% minus 8% or 0.02. And that gives us a price of over $300. It's selling for $255. So maybe, my mouse is so sensitive. Maybe we ought to spend more time researching Illinois Tool Works, huh? What do you think? I think you should. Companies that you've never heard of, don't know what they do, as opposed to companies like Apple and Amazon and Microsoft that everybody's buying because they're part of the Magnificent Seven and the folks on the telly can't stop talking about them. Blah, blah. It's not an exciting company, folks, which is why I love it. Check it out. Slide number 15, Aflac. Now, of course, you've heard about this company. They advertise and they have their, is it a duck or a goose? I don't know. Anyway, they're an insurance company. Really, they're categorized as a life insurance company, but they're a little bit more specialized than that. Although they do life insurance, they are more specialty insurance. They have these cancer policies, which are incredibly profitable for the life insurance company. And they're very useful to you if you own one, if you get cancer. But if you get hepatitis B or fatty liver disease or whatever, you know, they don't help. You want, in my humble opinion, an insurance policy for health that covers everything, not just certain. But some people, you know, they don't mind spending an extra $1,000 a year for that kind of insurance, whatever. Okay, so the current market price is $78.23, and they're currently paying $2 in annual dividends. Again, let's assume the dividends are growing at 8% a year. So if our required rate of return is required rate of return is 13%, then we take $2 times 1.08, or $2.16, divided by 13% minus 8%, or 0.05, and that's $43. Again, Aflac doesn't look so good if we want 13%. But if we simply lower our required rate of return, our discount rate, our expected rate of return, our desired rate of return to 10%, then we get $2 times 0.08, or $2.16, divided by 0.02, or $108. So if we're happy with 10%, Aflac is a company we want to do more research with. Right. We don't run out and buy it just because this model says, yeah, it's worth that much. No, we've got to do a whole lot more research. Life insurance companies are often called the invisible bankers. How do you know if a bank or a life insurance company is making money? Their doors are open. Oh, yes. Yeah, every once in a while, there's a bank or a life insurance company. It's very rare life insurance companies go under. There was one company called Equity Funding, and they just literally went into a room and made up insurance policies. Didn't last very long. Altria. Altria, who are they? Well, it used to be called Philip Morris. Right, Marlboros, Virginia Dims. You know who they are. They used to own a Kraft and Miller Brewing and Post Cereals, and they've spun all that off. And in fact, they spun off their company, the company that sells the Marlboros and the Virginia Dim Slims outside the United States, and that's called Philip Morris International. But tobacco is still a very profitable product, and Altria sells the Marlboros and the Virginia Slims in the United States. Current price is $40.11 as of February 9th. Currently paying $3.92 in annual dividends. Assume the dividends are also growing around 8%. So let's start with that same required rate of return of 13%. $3.92 times 1.08 is a little over $4.23, 4.2336. 13% minus 8% is 0.05, and you do that quotient, 4.2336 divided by 0.05, you get $84.67. Oh my goodness! Wow! Our model says that Altria is worth $84.67 if we expect a 13% rate of return. What a buy! If you conveniently ignore the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans each year and countless people outside the United States. Would you invest in a company whose product, when used as directed, kills its consumers? Well, actually, it's been a very profitable company for their investors for decades. Would you buy Altria? I have a question. Who's going to prosper when finally, when marijuana has finally become legal in the U.S. and around the world? I think the big tobacco companies are just waiting for that to happen. But we'll see. There used to be a wonderful show that I grew up on called Wall Street Week with Louis Rukeyser on that incredibly liberal, communist-inspired network called PBS, when nobody else talked about investments before, you know, cable and CNBC and the like on the street. And he had a gentleman on who was heavily invested in Altria, Philip Morris at the time, and a few other tobacco companies. And Mr. Rukeyser, Louis Rukeyser, a wonderful man. You can look him up on the internet. He wrote some good books, and he all his videos are still online. He pressed him. He said, "Sir," I forget the guy's name, but he said, "You're a Mormon, aren't you?" "Oh, yes, sir, I am." "You don't smoke, do you?" "Or drinking?" "No, no, no, Mr. Rukeyser, I don't." "How do you square owning Philip Morris, Altria, with your you know, life, your life values and your view on the world?" And he was very pragmatic. He said, "Look, my job is to my devotion is to my shareholders. My job is to increase their net worth, is to help them with their financial goals. And there are no secrets here. Everyone knows that smoking is very dangerous to your health, and yet people do it, and it's legal." So he didn't have a problem owning the Philip Morris. My wife had a problem. She didn't want me to buy it. And you do what your wife tells you to do. So this is where sometimes ethics and your life values, your values, have to be thought of when it comes to what you will invest in. Make sense? Okay, let's continue. Who is that?
Piano.
Who is that? Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made them up.
Huh?
I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Don't you just hate it when your conscience comes a calling? Yeah, folks, all these stocks here that we've been discussing have actually been growing their dividends at greater than 8%. Altria, 8.5%. AbbVie, 8.7%. Target, 9.4%. Aflac, 10.2%. And Illinois Tool Works have been growing their dividends at a torrid 13% rate. Wow. But the model does not work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get bizarre results. You get division by zero or negative prices. It doesn't make any sense. Therefore, for these companies, we should actually raise our expected rate of returns for all these companies. All are actually doing better than what the model is telling us for 10 or 13% rates of return. But folks, these are very large companies with long histories of rising dividends. They're not alone. They're not alone. But it's been harder and harder to find good prospects using this model, which to me means that stocks are expensive, which a lot of people will tell you, stocks are expensive. But it's funny, the more boring the company is, the easier it is to find companies that fit the Gordon growth model. That's what I've found, and the model that we're going to take a look at in the next presentation. So again, I've been patient. I haven't jumped on although I have a mutual fund that is growth oriented and it owns Microsoft and some of the others, but personally, they're just too expensive for me. I like these boring companies. Now, am I saying you should go out and buy these companies? Do I own these companies? I'm not going to tell you. No. We want you to find the companies that speak to you. But I tell you up front so that you understand, okay, Payano is more conservative, not politically conservative, but when it comes to picking stocks, he's more conservative. And then you're going to talk to other people who are more aggressive, and you're going to find your way. Let's continue. The constant growth model. Well, that was called the constant perpetual growth model. This is the constant growth model. This assumes dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. Well, and now it's looking more like math. Well, this is the Gordon growth model here, folks. Dividends times 1 plus the growth rate divided by our required rate of return minus the growth rate. And what we've done is we've added this term to account for growth for a number of years. And what's the exclamation point mean? It means you don't have to worry about this one. This model takes the Gordon growth model one step further, adding a term to account for constant growth for a number of years. So we're saying, you know, we believe that they're only going to grow their dividend for the next 5 years or 3 years or 10 years or whatever. We're not going to use it. You can if you want to. As I said, there are dozens of these models. We're going to concentrate on just a few of them. But we're going to show you some others that, you know, maybe someday down the line you'll play with. I don't like this one because unless T is only like 3 years or 4 years, it's very difficult for you to think more than that. And we're going to see why. 3, 4, 5 years, about as far as we can begin look into the future. Then some person came up with the two-stage dividend growth model, which is the Gordon growth model plus the constant growth model that we just looked at, plus this term. This assumes we'll continue to grow at a specified rate into the future, presumably the fast growth stage, and then grow at a second, presumably slower growth rate once the company matures and all the little skull and crossbones and the radioactive and explosions and bombs means that you do not have to goof with this thing. The model may look very impressive, especially for those who really love math, but it has some serious problems. It is very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock. Usually, companies don't pay significant dividends while they're growing quickly. And most importantly, many decades ago, Mr. Benjamin Graham, who is Mr. Warren Buffett's teacher and the author of The Intelligent Investor, which is a book that eventually you're going to read. Don't read it as your first book. Look at the bibliography. Read One Up on Wall Street or A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And make sure you read the textbook, please. Many decades ago, Benjamin Graham warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. And of course, he wrote this at a time when computers were, you know, filled up rooms and they were doing all these wonderful things with them. And of course, people thought they could, you know, do models like this, very sophisticated mathematical models. And he said, look, anything that removes judgment from the equation is to be avoided. At least, you know, it was his belief, and who am I to argue with Benjamin Graham? That's why he you know, people argue, because he passed away in 1975, so he never got to see them, but he would probably not be a big fan of index funds. Although other people say, of course he would be. Well, we don't know. He's dead. You know, we can't. But from what I've read, his belief that you should always continue using your judgment and stay away from overly sophisticated mathematical models tell me that he really probably wouldn't be a happy camper with index funds. Now, the mathematical models don't apply, but the lack of human judgment do. Okay. So the takeaway, you're going to work on the zero growth model and the Gordon growth model. We would now stop and work on worksheet number one, the second problem. And of course, there's an answer key in the commentary. Slide number 20, time for a break. But first, let's take a look at step back and make some observations of the dividend discount models. How do you use these versions of the models for companies that aren't paying any dividends? Well, you can't, because with no dividends, the models say that the value of the company is worth zero, because zero times anything is zero. And dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate. With large, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful. But with fast-growing companies in new industries, it is almost impossible, since most fast-growing companies are simply not paying dividends. But the problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding, repeat after me, the value of a stock, the value of a stock is based on the present value. It's based on the present value of its future cash flows. Cool. Oh man, you are so awesome. You are rising, dear official investment gurus. Make sure you do at least the second problem in worksheet number one, worksheet number two. Because in our next presentation, oh my goodness, you're going to see a version of the dividend discount model that works for companies that are paying dividends and also can work for companies that aren't paying dividends. You, after next presentation, are going to be official investment gurus, and I'm so excited. I really need to calm down, but I'm so very honored, happy, proud of you. And stick with us, dear students, because you're going to understand the value of future streams of incomes from our stocks. Oh boy, am I excited. See you in our next presentation when we take a look at the discounted cash flow model, a version of the dividend discount model.